Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Thursday, February 23rd, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Elodie.
Well, we finally had a decent day in the markets today. We had gold added. We hit 1250.90 an ounce as the outlook for higher U.S. interest rates and a stronger dollar will offset the effect of investors seeking a haven from the political risk in the U.S. and the Europe. That's what the mainstream media is saying. But gold did really have a nice day right now in the New York spot price after market computer trade. We're looking at gold up 1120 at 1249. Silver had a great day also, up 16 at 1825. Platinum up 5, 1012. Palladium up 4, 777, $777. The USDX today is trading a little weaker, down 0.32 at 101. Crude oil was up 76 at 54.35. And you have the paper markets today, again, hitting record highs on the Dow. And we have the Dow up 34 points, 20,809. Hey, Al, did you hear it's going to 30,000?
Not this afternoon, though, right?
Soon.
Is that today or
soon.
Tomorrow?
Maybe.
By the end
today.
Of the week.
The markets are closed already, but so it's not today.
Okay, so tomorrow.
So maybe tomorrow. 30,000. Okay. Hold on to your seats. The NASDAQ was down 25 points at 58.35, and the S&P... I was up maybe a point at 23.63. There was pressure on the 10-year yield, though, 0.03 to the downside at 2.39%. And, of course, the euro was stronger, 106, up 0.27. European and Asian markets were basically unchanged overnight. And there's just a lot of news, a lot of snippets, a lot of opinions, and a lot of analysis that are just hitting these markets today. We had Mr. Trump, he met with corporate chief executives to discuss job creations and his plans to craft new tax and trade policies. This weekend, you have Warren Buffett releases his annual letter to shareholders. You have legislators in the UK. And again, this is March, and I always said March would be the month where we really began to see things break apart. Now, it doesn't mean break apart, you know, the world and the sky's falling, but we're going to see those cracks widen because these things do have to be discussed. There's going to be there'll be more of an idea of the plans coming from this administration as far as tax cuts, as far as infrastructure spending, and the Obamacare. It seems like those are all being put off either till later in the year or next year. So, but a lot of things I believe begin to happen beginning March. So you have, let's see. I mean, you know, there's just a lot of political uncertainty, and this market is being fueled by breath, words, Twitters, tweets. But Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin signaled no urgency to designate China a currency manipulator, contradicting an October pledge by then-candidate Donald Trump to direct his Treasury Secretary to name China a manipulator on the first day of his administration. You know, China's part of the IMF now. You know, I don't think they would ever be designated as a currency manipulator as being part of the IMF.
They're going to have to define that term, and it may be that they've defined the term currency manipulator, but I'll bet they don't have a really effective definition yet that they can say, oh, China's a currency manipulator, Germany's a currency manipulator, but the United States is not a currency. I don't think they can define the term in a way that does not exclude include the United States.
Well, they usually do have a range in which their currencies can fluctuate. And I know China's been buying up, you know, buying bonds in order to try to bring up the value of their
buying up currency. American bonds, U.S. bonds?
No, theirs, their own.
Okay.
Buying and own to strengthen their own currency. So, you know, once they became part of the IMF, they have to play by, to some degree, the IMF rules. And you know, so you do have a percentage of that they can fluctuate with their currencies and something. But, you know, if you have other problems and but this is coming from China, so who knows what's the truth coming out of China. Well, who knows what the truth is coming out of any global government anymore. Yeah. So,
you know, one
they're
going to
say what
out,
people want to hear.
A couple of commentators have made this point. It's worth respecting. You said that the one number you can rely on are tax revenues. How much money is the government taking in? And when you compare it to how much money the government took in tax revenues a month ago, a quarter ago, a year ago, it tells you whether the economy is getting stronger or weaker. All right? And all the rest of it that might be manipulated, but it was their opinion, the tax revenues, you can get a straight answer there. And the number is, in fact, falling, which indicates that the economy is weakening. And despite all the hoopla and the rest of that sort of thing, if you look at tax revenues, real amount of money that's being made in this country is diminishing, and that indicates the we are in or approaching a recession.
Well, I think to the most part that's going to be the truest number that we see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's a lot of things that could impact that too. You know, so but
well, I know if yes, if they have an unseasonably cold winter or an unseasonably warm winter, these can affect the GDP.
Oh, it rained today.
It rained today.
It rained.
The rain fell down instead of rising upward. It fell down, and
if you have tax cuts and stuff like that.
Those of you who don't get the joke we're talking about, in the last couple of years,
they've always complained
about the first quarter or the third or the fourth quarter of the previous year, the first quarter or whatever the year was. I said, oh, we didn't, the economy didn't grow as fast as we wanted it to grow. And then one year it was at least one year because it was unseasonably cold in the winter. I mean, who would have thought it'd get cold in the wintertime? And the other one was it was unseasonably warm in the winter. And, you know, it's just laughable. They need a new comedy writer up there in Washington, D.C. They need to give us better jokes, Melody.
You think so?
Yes. This is not the quality I would expect from Washington, D.C.
Well, today, Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, also said that, they're looking to have tax cuts by August of this year. We did have the Dow post its 10th straight record after his remarks today. And so that's all it takes. It reminds me of the Greenspan era where whatever he said, the markets would go up. And it's the same thing. Oh, well, we're going to have these tax cuts by August. I promise you this. Well, let's just wait and see. Can't you give us a little more detail what that might be?
And, my understanding is that Mnuchin said they hoped to have the tax cuts in by August, which means it's nothing like a done deal, right?
He wants to see a very significant tax reform passed before Congress August recess. Well, we know that's not going to happen. But they've been working, and you know maybe they will get it done. I mean, you know, that's not any disrespect to the in the White House, but.
I'm going to guess that they get something done. And the question will be, how significant will it be? There will be some sort of tax reform by August. I won't say it's an absolute fact, but I'd give it a 70% probability. 2 to 1. 2 chances out of 3 that there's going to be some sort of a tax reform by August, but whether it will be particularly significant or not remains to be seen. It may be that the best Trump can do, he can get something. Well, I promised a tax and I got it. Maybe, not as big as people had hoped.
Well, you know, the thing of it is, as much as you cut, you still have to pay.
Yeah, I know.
It has to pay for itself, and that's the problem. You know, so you can only cut it as much as it can pay for itself. And so, we just don't know yet, you know, what they will be able to do. So I guess anything is better than nothing.
Even there's something to be said. I don't like saying this, but there is something to be said just to get the tax cut, get the idea on the table and say, yes, we're going to do it. Well, maybe we don't do it. But yes, we're going to do it. Well, maybe we don't do it. But still, it's there, that's being talked about. It could happen, you know. And all by itself, there's an effect there. It's kind of like Janet yelling at the Federal Reserve. She's giving forward guidance, and the markets respond to her. She says, I think we're going to do such and such. We may raise the interest rates in March. Markets absorb that. They adjust to it. By the time she actually raises the rates, if she raises the rates, there isn't a sudden surprise. No spikes. No.
Well, tomorrow we have J.C. Penney. They are releasing their earnings. We have new home sales come out at 10 o'clock, and we have consumer sentiment at 10 a.m. also tomorrow. So, well, we know what they're going to be. Any predictions? Consumer sentiment is going to be 340. Anyway.
It goes up, goes down. I mean, that's just the way it is. Everybody understands that, and you know, they follow stock markets and other things like it. When you revert to the mean, there is an average trend that's been established over the period. You can figure it out any way you want. For the last week, for the last year, for the last decade, for the last half century, you can calculate a trend, and people will argue that we're going to return to approximately that trend. We may go much higher at times, we may go much lower, but we're going to return to that trend. That's an argument. Not necessarily true, but it's credible, you know, credible argument. And we got to kind of return to the average. We go up a lot, we go down a lot, we come back to the average. Go up a down, up a lot, down a lot, come back to the average. Does that actually prove anything, though, Melody? Does it prove that we're always coming back to the average, or does it prove we're always going up a lot or down a lot compared to the average? Which end? We've got three numbers
both.
Here. We got the high,
both,
we got the average, and we got the low. Which
both.
One is controlling?
Both.
No. Any of them? Yeah, both of them.
Both.
Yeah.
Both.
Got an article here from the AFP, which is the French equivalent to the Associated Press in this country. And the headline is, IMF warns against pretending unpayable debts can be paid. What a headline, Melody. I mean, this reminds me of what we've been saying. Hey, you can't pay the debt. What can't be paid won't be paid. I've been doing this for 5 years. The IMF is kind of catching up. They warn that pretending unpayable debts can be paid. However, it's not quite as dramatic as I'm making it out to be. It's only about Greece. It says in a not-so-subtle jab at European officials and their dealings with Greece, the International Monetary Fund on Thursday issued a warning against pretending that unpayable debts can be repaid. In a blog written by the International Monetary Fund's chief Greece negotiator, its chief economist and general counsel, the fund rarely mentions the crisis-ridden country by name. They don't say Greece, but the description clearly fits Greece's current negotiations with its Eurozone partners. It's been stalled for, which have been a source of months of conflict with the IMF. The IMF repeatedly said Greece's debt is not sustainable, and the country requires debt restructuring. Now, I've been saying the same thing. The people in Greece, the new Secretary of the Treasury, if that was the proper term for it, I don't even remember his name, but he was a rock star for a while when he and the Tsipras, the current Greek president, were elected about 2 years ago. He said, "You got to file for bankruptcy." Well, this is interesting to me. The IMF says, "Oh, we can't pretend the debt can be paid, but we need debt restructuring." And I'm saying that Greece needs to just file for bankruptcy and be done with it. Pull a bandage off the wound and let's get it done. You understand? But instead, they're going to fool around with it, debt restructuring. What's the difference between bankruptcy, filing for bankruptcy, and debt restructuring? And the difference is bankruptcy is just says, I'm not paying, and too bad for y'all. Understand, that's bankruptcy. I don't have the money. Too bad. Sorry. debt restructuring is saying, you have to agree that my debt, the $1 million I owe you, you'll own, you have to agree that you'll accept only $500,000.
You just think we're paying you.
Well, it's, and you either take the five, you either agree, you know, we reach an agreement, you take the 500 grand instead of the million, or you get nothing. So which will it be? And we need to have an agreement. Why? Because they can't, I think the reason is they can't deal with bankruptcy. They can't destroy debt. They need to maintain the illusion that the debt instruments are still performing, even if they've been restructured, and instead of getting $1 million that you borrowed and you promised to repay, you're only repaying 500,000 or a quarter million. They need to maintain that in the debt-based monetary system. I don't think they can have widespread bankruptcies without destroying so much debt that it does great harm to a debt-based monetary system and a debt-based economy. So they've got to maintain the debt. We need restructuring. And they say it a couple of times in this article. But it's interesting to me here, as it's a pretending that unpayable debt can be repaid will only sap the effectiveness of the debtor's adjustment efforts, ultimately making all parties lose more than if they had promptly faced the facts. And here they are telling little Greece that. But I wonder if anybody's going to communicate the same message to the United States government. We are at least, our government is at least as deeply in debt as Greece is in terms of when you compare size and rest, that sort of thing. We're in as much trouble as Greece is. We've just managed to, I don't know, avoid facing it up until now, and the world hasn't forced us to face it, but we are not much better off than Greece. And we are all pretending that the debt can be paid. And this is the fundamental confidence that we have when they say, oh, the system depends on public confidence in the dollar. What do they mean by that confidence? They mean we've got to have confidence, ultimately, that the debt-based currency, the debt behind our debt-based currency, can and will be paid. If we ever lose confidence in the pay, in the idea that the debt's going to be paid, the whole thing blows up. It disappears. And, I don't know, here we are pretending that the unpayable debts can be repaid. That pretense is important to avoid facing up to the facts and saying, oh, we're not going to pay the debt. And what does that mean? It means everybody's holding those paper debt instruments are going to lose their assets before this is all over. Well, at least that's what it means to me. And I think that's the logic of it. I think it's a reliable interpretation of it. But in any case, it was interesting to me to see that the International Monetary Fund is warning against pretending to pay your debts, pretending that your debts can be paid in a debt-based monetary system that circles the globe, in a debt-based economy that circles the globe. The IMF is warning too much debt. That strikes me as significant. Let's take a break for a couple commercials. We'll be right back on Financial Survival. We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on shortwave radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Everyone enjoyed very much purchasing $20 gold pieces at bullion prices. It's not quite the same, but I can almost do, we can, or I do have, Mint State 61 $20 gold pieces as the same price as bullion. But those are limited. So for those of you who are looking to buy, you know, 40 or 50 coins, I'd have to make sure that I could get those in Mint State 61 $20 gold pieces. Mint State 62 gold pieces, they would only be a few dollars more. And the best buy, the Mint State 63 St. Gaudens, you're only looking at $25 more than what a gold bullion coin would cost. So, you know, folks, I don't know how long this is going to last, that the spreads are low enough that I can reduce my costs. I'm reducing my costs so we can, so I can offer you this special deal. And for those of you who like the $20 gold pieces, they provide protection, privacy, performance. They're great coins to add in your portfolio. Just don't pay any attention to what some of these other people say, because they really don't know and they won't explain their opinions. These are great coins to own, and you can get them $25 what a bullion coin would cost you. So
give us a, beat it.
Can't beat it.
No.
I mean, you're crazy not to get as many of these as you can get. So 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. Those Mint State 63 St. Gaudens are $1,345. So,
an article from the Federalist Papers. It is Trump's plan for education has teacher unions freaking out. Donald Trump is thinking about blowing up America's educational system as we know it, getting our kids' education out of the hands of unaccountable Washington bureaucrats and self-serving teachers' unions. The president is considering a national tax credit scholarship that would provide working-class families with money they need so their children can attend the private, religious, or charter school of their choice. This would be a first-of-its-kind program that would funnel billions of dollars to families so they wouldn't be locked into public schools that might be failing. It's one of several tax credit proposals under review by the White House to fulfill President Trump's campaign promise to promote the expansion of charter schools and vouchers. During a recent meeting with parents and teachers, White House Trump said he wants every single disadvantaged child in America, no matter what their background or where they live, to have a choice about where they go to school. Well, there's more to it, and of course the unions think this is crazy, and it's going to take money away from the struggling public schools, but they complain that the end result is, no matter how you, what you call it, a tax, some sort of a scholarship or tax reduction, what a set of national tax credit scholarship. It's merely a voucher in disguise and would take tax dollars from struggling public schools and fund private schools. Mm-hmm. Well, is that a bad thing? Is it a bad thing to fund private schools? Because public education has fallen in my lifetime from where we had the best education system in the world to where we're now number 17.
Well, I don't think it's because of or fixing the problem with the voucher. That's not the problem. The problem is the school system.
Yeah.
And just like all these other fixes that we have, they're just cover overs because none of them are getting to the heart of the matter.
But now, I maybe think this
we
would.
Can't, maybe we can't fix the heart of the matter.
Yeah, I think we can.
Maybe we do have to just do something to, you know, get us through and maybe make things changes and do the best we can. But I don't think this is fixing the heart of the problem.
I think it is because the problem is the school system, and the school system, the public school system, can't survive without more public funds. If we have a way of taking public funds that ultimately would otherwise go to a system that is clearly failing, we take the money away from them and we say, okay, John Smith over here is opening up a public school and I think he might be able to do a good job. We're going to try John. We're going to give him the money this year. And John can start a school and get his own teachers and get and start his own and teach the way he wants to teach. And if he knows what he's talking about, he's going to be able to help our children get a decent education. He can set this up without the impediment of the public schools hanging on. Not that the unions aren't there, won't be in these private schools. The bureaucrats in the public schools won't be in these private schools. And maybe they can actually do the job. And if they can't, we can take the money away from John. We'll give it to Sally. She's opening up a school just two blocks away. And we can give it to Sally and let her take a shot at this. Now, you know, it's not as simple as I'm making it out to be. But it becomes a competition between who can actually deliver education.
What's going to happen is, agreed, I think the federal government should be cut out. You know, it does need to get back to the states. That's the number one thing. But I don't think it can be handled by vouchers and tax credits. You're just moving these kids all around. And if you have a community where the kids are going someplace else, that community is losing tax dollars. Guess what? Property taxes are going to increase. Money is going to have to come from somewhere. We have no money. How much more money can the people pay to give vouchers?
It doesn't have to come.
Out of the school, there shouldn't be tax credits. You know, in order to, you know, send
the idea
children.
Is the idea behind the tax credits is get them out of the public schools and get them into a private school that might actually be able to teach them something. That's the idea. It's not about funding and saying we're going to take instead of giving money to these people we know they fail, we're going to give it to people who might succeed.
We should fix the public schools then.
I don't think you can. And on top of which, if anybody can fix the public schools, who can fix them? We the people, we the parents, who's going to go in there and make that effort? And the answer is we're not. But if they can see that the money's starting to siphon away and the children are starting to siphon away from the public schools and go to private schools, the public schools will either have to close their doors or they're going to have to start competing themselves and delivering a quality education. And at the point in time when they restore their reputation with the public and they say, yeah, we can deliver a quality education in this country at the public schools, if they start competing and they start realizing, look, if you want to hang on to your job, you better stop screwing around and you better educate these children and do what's right. Not what's good for the union, not what's good for your retirement, what is good for the children. And if they can accept that that mentality, that sentiment, then they can become competitive again, and then all of a sudden it can shift backwards.
The whole problem we have in everything is because the federal government is involved, and it's the problem from the very beginning. I don't think we should use the federal tax dollars going to private schools.
I think that's true.
Maybe there's another way you can do it and so forth. I got to think, you know, come up with a plan. But no, keep the federal government out of the schools.
I agree.
They shouldn't be paying for private schools.
Oh, I agree that they shouldn't be paying. They should be. I agree with that, that they shouldn't be paying for private schools. They shouldn't be paying for public schools. Public schools should be supported down at the local level. And people say, oh, there's some poor people here and they don't have enough money. Look, you can run a decent school any place in the country. You can go down the block I live on and there are people here who are capable of teaching reading. There are people here that are capable of teaching writing and mathematics and maybe not calculus and astrophysics and the rest of it, but there's ordinary women and adults, males down here that are capable of teaching. You could open up your living room bring 20 kids in there and you could teach them mathematics today. And tomorrow they can go to Miss Jones' house and they can learn English or whatever.
I mean, there
it
are
could
some
be good- done if you want to do it. You don't need to have an institution. It can be done if you have people that are willing to take. I mean, you could find people on, you know.
Hey, Al, there are some public schools out there that are good. And you can have a large community, and I think it's, and I mean, if you want to transport students around, I mean, you can have two high schools in an area. One is better than the other, and I think people should have the right to choose between those two schools.
But yeah, if they can get in.
But I don't think, now that can be changed. You know, but then you're upsetting and again,
well, you know, one other thing about
this. Keep the tax dollars and credits out. You know, keep the federal government out.
Probably so.
Get rid of Common Core. You know, again, accountability. Where's the accountability in any of these schools anymore?
Yeah.
I mean, they changed everything, so all these children would be inclusive. So they're, you know, so everyone is equal.
No
so
child everyone, gets ahead. That
no
was the
child
Bush's
left
program.
Behind.
No, no, child, it was no child gets ahead. That's what it was. But
both. Correct. And no child gets ahead. So these are the things that have to change in order to improve our public schools. And it has to start locally. It has to start with communities.
Well,
you know, but so, it's a huge problem. But no.
Do you remember what got government involved in public schools?
Yeah.
Probably before your time, Mildred.
No, I would think segregation.
No, it was the Sputnik. It was when the Russians put the first satellite into orbit around the world. That was what scared people and said, oh my gosh, the Russians are way ahead. There was books. Why can't Sally learn to read? And Yvonne can read and Sally can't. I can't remember the names of the books exactly. But that's what triggered it. And government got in and said, we're going to fund the sciences in all the high schools and the rest of that sort of thing. We've got to catch up to the Russians. Once you start taking that government money for sciences, it's not long before you're taking it for the humanities, and then you're taking it for self-esteem classes and how to sing Kumbaya, the rest of that sort of thing. And everybody's looking for the money instead of the education. But that's where the government really started to jump. Sputnik, back about 1958, 59, I don't recall clearly, but it was about that time, probably about 1958.
And then when they desegregated, I would think.
Yeah, maybe to some extent, perhaps, jumped in initially to provide, stimulate science, learning sciences in this country. But, and once they got in, everything started to go to heck. You know,
get them out. Started. Parents, you'd think parents would want their children to be, parents, give some control to the parents. Maybe parents don't care, I'm sure.
You're ripping up for me, Melody. Producer,
you are.
Todd, you can give us a. Do you hear? Can you hear Melody? Okay, Todd.
Well, we'll just keep talking because we can't let the listeners on the hook.
Melody, they don't mind if we leave them on the hook once in a while. It kind of adds a certain amount of suspense. You know, people. What are they going to say next, Melody?
So what's next?
Okay,
we're good. What's
he
next?
He says he's hearing us both. I don't know. Let's see what we've got here. Let me take a quick look. Here's one. Donald Trump. No, that's not the one I want. Wait. Here's one. This is from AFP again. U.S. targets millions in sweeping deportation plan. The Trump administration issued tough new orders for a sweeping crackdown on illegal immigrants, putting nearly all of the country's 11 million undocumented foreigners in its crosshairs. It's interesting to me they referred to both illegal immigrants and undocumented foreigners. All right, we've had undocumented aliens. We now have undocumented foreigners, but they are saying illegal immigrants also. To me, that's evidence of a kind of change. Although this was this article was written by AFP or published by AFP, which is French. Just the same, it's evidence that in France they're willing to talk about immigrants being illegal. Not just refugees, not just a humane problem, but illegal as in criminal. All right, they're willing to talk about it in France, and they're suggesting maybe we should talk that way in this country too. The order sent shivers through the U.S. immigrant communities, where millions of people who've spent years building families and livelihoods in this country, most of them from Mexico and Central America, were seriously threatened with deportation for the first time in decades. Well, it may be that there's millions who spent years building families and livelihoods, but there are millions more that are just up here with a pair of pants and a shirt on their back and to see what they can get. Rights groups labeled the move a witch hunt, warning that mass deportation would damage families with deep roots in the United States and hurt the economy. We've got to protect the families, Melody, and we've got to protect the economy. And that means if there's criminals out there, we have to let them go. And any serial killers out there, we've got to turn the serial killers loose, because what would happen if we jailed all the serial killers, Melody? It would damage their families. They don't want to see Uncle Bob, the serial killer, go to prison. We've got to protect Uncle Bob's family by letting him go free. We've got to protect the economy, because Uncle Bob, the serial killer, he has a job where he was making money. It damages the economy when we put serial killers in prison. And what about pedophiles? Melody, same thing. These people out there, they have jobs, they have families. We can't just be jailing them because they like to fornicate with children. I mean, I'm being facetious, of course, and the whole thing. Oh, we can't do. Look, they're criminals. You understand? They broke the law. And I know that doesn't mean anything to people in Congress and the Senate and the government, because they break the law on a routine basis. I think they feel more comfortable with criminals than they do with people who obey the law. But in any case, the issue is not really about the illegal aliens. The issue is about whether or not the government's going to enforce the law. Our problem right now is not with Mexicans that are coming up here from across the border. Our problem is with a Congress and a Senate and previous administrations that said, oh, let's bring them on up here. Sure, it's against the law, but we don't have to obey the law. We're the government. Yeah, you do have to obey the law. You have to obey the law to maintain public confidence in the government. You have to obey the law to tell us that the law means something. It's not just who's got the most money or the most political clout. The law has to mean something, and that means the government has to enforce it, and they haven't. In fact, they've been encouraging. Bush openly encouraged illegal aliens to come into this country. Barack Obama, to a lesser extent, did the same thing. Neither made a serious effort to keep them from coming in. Trump is saying, look, let's enforce the law. And some people, oh, you're going to hurt families. Yeah, you hurt families every time you jail a serial killer. You hurt families every time you jail a child molester. That hurts families. It hurts the economy. It costs money to put people in prison. It can't be that we run this nation on the basis of we've got to protect everybody's feelings. There have to be moral and legal values that we respect. And if you violate those, all right, fine, then there's a problem and you have to pay for it. And we have to allow that payment, even though it adversely impacts our economy or families. We still have to do something about it. If we don't, we're going to go right down the pipes. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
I need to hear it just one more time. Oh, would you tell me again? Tell me again tonight. Each and every heart is
seen. prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Oh, 1-800-375-4188. Don't forget, we got those great Mint State 63 $20 St. Gaudens on sale today for $1,345. You can have one or 100. Give us a call, though. Visit our website at dgscoins.com.
You know, when we broke for commercials, I was talking about this new enforcement of deporting illegal aliens, all right? And pointed out that the people who are against this are saying, oh, it's going to damage families and hurt the economy. That's their that's their argument. But we have others who are in favor. John Kelly, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. He issued the new orders in two memos. He said they were necessary to address a problem that has overwhelmed government resources. The surge in illegal immigration at the southern border has overwhelmed federal agencies and resources and created a significant national security vulnerability. I don't know that this is about national security, and I know it's not about families, and it's not about the economy. But both sides marshal their arguments, and none of them, in my opinion, deal with what strikes me as the essential fact. Our government is not enforcing the law. They are not protecting this country from an invasion by illegal aliens. If these guys were coming across the border with rifles, this would be a war. And maybe it is. I mean, it's like bringing the Muslims into Europe and the rest of it. Oh, we're going to bring refugees in here. It's the humane thing to do. Europe will cease to exist as Europe if they continue to bring the Muslims in. All right? They have an obligation to protect their own borders. They can't be too bad. We've got a problem. If I'm not crazy about bringing illegal aliens into this country, not simply because they're illegal, but because, in my opinion, they're cowards. They won't fight for freedom in their own country. In my opinion, they'll never fight for freedom in this country.
No, I think
we've got enough cowards in this country as it stands. We don't need to bring any more in. You come in as an illegal alien, I would put you in 8 weeks of military training. I'd give you an AR-15, 1,000 rounds of ammunition, and the Mexican government take over the country of Mexico. Have an internal, you know, the people come up here is because the government.
Why not clean up your own culture? Why come up to this culture? Why come up to America and then say, oh, we bring more Mexicans with us, we'll bring more of our culture?
Al, they're not cowards. It's not any different than what we've seen here in this country. Our government is corrupt, and why?
Oh, I know.
And I'm not pointing fingers to anyone. It's just, it is what it is. You have... The people of this country have sat by. We've been fed a bunch of lies. We've been fed a good life. We've been fed, you know, so many things that we've just have ignored the problems.
Pay no attention to the little man behind the curtain. Well, I'm suggesting we need to pay attention. We need to pay attention, and we need to pay attention in a way that may not be pleasant. It may not be conducive to singing Kumbaya.
Well, I'm not sure.
There are issues at hand that are important and powerful, and you have to protect what you have. You can't just open the doors to anybody who feels they had a hard day, had a bad hair day, a bad life. And they, well, therefore, we get to go to the United States of America, and we get to do whatever we want to do up there.
But I wouldn't. I mean, if somebody wants to search for a better life, and they can't, and they have the proper means to be legal in doing it.
No.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I agree with that 100%. If they're coming in legally, that's fine. The problem is not...
You said both legal and illegal. So...
When I said both what?
When you were calling them cowards, you were saying they were both legal. No, legal immigration is fine.
I have no objection to legal immigration. Again, my problem is not with the Mexicans. My problem are the immigrants. It's not really my problem. I don't care. Right? I don't mind. I don't blame them on one level. My problem is with the government that refuses to protect our own borders. We're off. Let's go get involved, and we're going to fight for democracy in Syria or Iraq or some other place, Afghanistan. We're fighting for democracy, but we're not protecting our own borders. This is insane. This is self-destructive. This is it's treasonous. And they just, well, we're the government. If we don't want to obey the law, we don't have to. We don't want to enforce the law. We don't have to. Yeah, you do. Yes, you do. That's what I'm arguing. I don't care about the illegal aliens per se. They don't bother me. I know that they're decent people. A lot of them are, and they're hardworking and the rest of that. They're not the problem. They are the consequence of the problem. The problem is a bunch of treasonous whores in the cat house on the Potomac who will not protect the borders of this country. And it's not an accident. I saw this back a couple of years ago. We had in Congress, they were having some sort of a hearing, and somebody held up a map of the North American Union. And the North American Union included Canada, the United States, and Mexico. That's why they want the United States integrated with Canada. They want one big, happy, three-nation country, Canada, United States, and Mexico. And I'm saying it's wrong, because you won't maintain the culture that made this country prosperous in the first place. You want to give it up? You want to live like Mexicans? Go ahead. I'm not saying, you know, if that's what you want to do, do it. But don't imagine that you can embrace the Mexican culture and not wind up living in poverty. If you want prosperity, you're going to have to look to see what was it that made the United States great, and you're going to have to emulate those values. You're going to have to embrace those values, and then you may also become prosperous. You want to take values from a failing country and think it's going to work from an impoverished country and think those same values are going to be conducive to prosperity in a new country that's you know, has a different system of value? The idea is, if you want to come here, you want to come here for the whatever prosperity remains in this country, you have to embrace the values that made us prosperous. You can't assume Muslims come in. They think they're going to be just as prosperous as Americans are. Their faith is, it inhibits their ability to be prosperous, right? They can't. Part of the reason Muslims come from Muslim countries to places like Europe and the United States is to get out from under the Muslim faith and the consequences of that system of values and get into some place where perhaps they can make a decent living. It's about values. You got to grab on, and if you've got a system of values, or if you at least had one, that was conducive to prosperity and freedom, you can't listen to them. No, you better hang on tight to your system of values. Hang on to your culture if it's been serving you well. If it hasn't, abandon the culture and get one that'll work for you. But you can't just tolerate people coming in with a new culture that aren't going to be assimilated, and they think they're entitled, once they get here, they're entitled to everything that prosperous people can have.
Also, a lot of those countries that they come from will not allow them to change within their country.
That's why
you get your head whacked off.
I understand. That's why King George, ultimately the American Revolution. We told enough Englishmen, they said, all right, fine, you want to be free?
And you know how hard it's been for this country to have a grassroots organized organization. This election is probably the first time that I can remember that people have actually come together for many different reasons, though. For many, many different reasons. So I'm not sure that it was a truly organized grassroots effort to get the president that we have. But at this point, does it really matter? Because we're certainly far better off than what we had than what we would have had should had Clinton, taken the position.
Ms. Hillary.
Pardon?
Ms. Hillary?
Ms. Hillary. Ms.
We would all be stronger together. Canadians, the Americans, and the Mexicans stronger together.
We did dodge one.
Yeah. I don't know that. I'll never.
But anyway.
Will Trump be the hero we hope him to be? Hard to say. But I am. To this day, the idea of Hillary being president still makes the hair on the back of my neck kind of stand up a little bit. I'm saying, I don't know. I don't think so.
Anyway, it's going to be interesting these next couple of years. But the point I was trying to make, though, it's very difficult in these other places. And, they're raised not to be free. They're raised not to rise
up.
They have the wrong values. Brainwashed. If you don't know, it's hard to do. So,
well, somebody, hopefully, assuming that I'm correct in how I'm looking at this, perhaps the word will get to people who are able to make others understand, look, you've got to change your values. It's not your geography that's condemning you. It's your values. It's your system of values. And I'm not arguing that geography is irrelevant. I'm saying that values are more significant than geography.
Your values come from your religion.
They probably do.
Well, I rest my case. So they can't change because their religion dictates something else.
Then they should welcome their poverty and say, look, this is a price I'm going to pay to embrace this faith.
Heck,
right? They can't just say, look, let's go to the Christian world. We're prosperous. They'll still be Muslims. We'll embrace our system of values that kept us impoverished in Mexico. You need a new system of values. You need it as much. If you're coming from an impoverished country, you need to check all of your values. You need to think, what is doing me good? What's going to hold me down? And much of what your problem is, as is always the case, is something wrong with you. Most of my problems are mine. It'd be nice if I could blame them on other people, but you learn. It's really my fault most of the time.
It is always your fault, Al.
No, it's not always my fault. Sometimes it's the producer's fault. That's why we have producers on these radio programs.
See, passing the buck. And you just said.
No, I don't have any bucks to be passing, Melody. It's the government that passes the buck around. They're bribing people.
But what else we got?
I don't know. What did we do here? We did. Did we talk about education already?
Yes, we did.
All right.
Well, I think I did lose you, Al. I don't know if I'm lost. You're lost. Looks like my internet set is good. I guess we totally lost Al, and I'm not sure. Yes, we totally lost Al, so.
No, you're not totally, Melody. I'm back. I'm back.
How did you get back?
I don't know. I just dialed in and it answered. I don't know.
Is this program over yet?
No, it's not. We have about 3.5 minutes to go. 3 minutes, something like that. But here's what I'm trying to make. I don't know how far back, but the headline from Daily Bell: states treat gold and silver as real money now, and they name a number of states, including Arizona, Utah. I think Oklahoma was one of the states that were mentioned here that have passed laws that are conducive to recognizing gold and silver as money. Actually, what they're doing is they're recognizing it as legal tender, which legal tender is not money. Money is gold and silver. Legal tender is something issued by the government other than gold and silver. It's paper, it's plastic, it's digital, a bunch of things are legal tender. But gold and silver are money, right? Tangible, physical money. Nevertheless, they're beginning to accept gold and silver. They're recognizing there's a movement. It's only a few states so far, but there is a growing movement of states that are beginning to say, wait a second, I think we have to start treating gold and silver as if they were money, which in my mind is interesting and exciting news. I heard Greenspan has been widely quoted in an interview he did last month in January, if I understand correctly, for World Gold Council or someone, I don't remember who interviewed him. But Greenspan, I read his interview, excerpts from his interview, and he's advocating gold. He's extolling the virtues of gold and to a lesser extent silver. And a lot of people think, oh, he's going back to the essay that he wrote back in the 1960s about gold and I need to become a libertarian again. Well, but I think there's more to it than that. I think the government, I'm reading it, and I think I talked about this a little bit yesterday, and I'll be talking about it some more because I think this might be correct. The way I'm reading it, it signals to me that they are laying the foundation for maybe going back to a gold standard. I think they understand that they're not going to be able to sustain our debt-based fiat monetary system much longer. I think they understand that they're not going to be able to back it up with more debt-based instrument, monetary instruments like special drawing rights from the IMF. I think that whether they like it or not, they're going to have to go back to something tangible like gold and or silver in order to hold this thing together, hold the system together, and maintain their power. If they don't, the whole system's going to blow up in their face, and not so long from now. So when I see some of the states are beginning to treat gold and silver as real money, that's another leaf in the breeze that says, I think we're going back to a gold-based monetary system. I know it's a long shot. I'm not going to bet on it absolutely, but I think it's possible. And if we do, price of gold is going to go higher than most people can believe. I'm Alfred Ask here with Cedars from Outer Mitchell. We'll be back tomorrow in time. Oh, good Lord, this is you and me and the and Todd the producer. Bye-bye.
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.